This episode of the Two Fat Expats is brought to you by the Shangri-La Doha. To book your next stay, go to www.shangri-la.com/Doha. Shangri, 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 stay at the Shangri-La. Ooh, I love it.
Sarah, hello.
Hi.
Yes, you're singing about the Shangri-La, aren't you?
It's become my second home. I actually prefer it to my own home.
And I'm not jealous one bit, not one bit, that you're swinging it up at the Shangri-La and I'm here. Yes.
They all know, you know what's that song on Cheers where they know your first name? That's how it is at the Shangri-La. I just walk in. And she's back again, they say. Here she is.
Oh, dear. So, Sez, it's all a bit exciting because we talked about last year, we sort of said that there'd been some talk about a sponsor for Two Fat Expats in the new year. And we had to sort of stay a bit hush-hush about it because it hadn't all sort of come through as yet. And
wait for the signature on the dotted line.
Yes, and we also had to wait for the hotel to open. That was the other thing as well.
Which is a bit of a Doha thing, isn't it? So anything that's due to open in Doha, they'll say it's, you know, oh, we'll be open by October, but really in Doha time that means about 6 months later because there's so much red tape you have to go through here.
Or sometimes 6 years later.
Yes. Well, the general manager of the Shangri-La here in Doha, he's the longest running GM that has worked at a hotel before it's even opened.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. What a lovely guy he is too. But so says, I can't even remember how long ago it was, but the very clever Rowida, who is a very savvy marketing woman at the Shangri-La Hotel, she very cleverly sort of put some feelers out of, you know, different forms, I guess, of social media and podcasts and blogs and people around town. And she approached us about becoming a sponsor for Two Fat Expats.
And we said, oh, let's just think about it. Yes.
Absolutely. It was very exciting. And then our first event we had with them was the breast cancer awareness morning that we had, which was lovely. But a lot of our listeners came along that morning. I think we had sort of 45 of our listeners with us that morning. And a lot of people asked, well, you know, how did it come about? How did you get sponsorship? Because I guess, you know, we're just two women that started talking on iTunes underneath the stairs with no technical experience and no experience of how to put a show together or how to produce a show.
So you really do learn as we go.
Absolutely. And we were just over the moon with, I think we had something like 50,000 downloads in our first few months. So that was great sort of encouragement to go along. And then to have Rowida and the Shangri-La say, hey, we'd like to sponsor you, was huge. So that was sort of how it all came about. They Rowida actually listens to the podcast every week as she drives to and from work. And she's a listener, which makes it even better because I love it to have that.
And she gets it. She understands how the whole thing works. She understands that, you know, we really do have a global audience now, and I think that's why it works so well with the Shangri-La. Yes, we're affiliated with the Doha branch, but that doesn't mean to say that our listeners who are in Singapore or KL, you know, you're next time you might want a fancy dinner or a staycation like we're going to talk about today. You know, you might think, oh, hang on, the Shangri-La might be the place to go and stay.
That's right. And says the deal that you and I made was that we would only work with people that did get it and had an understanding of expat women. And Rowida is an expat woman. She's originally from Libya.
And an expat kid.
Yes, and an expat kid as well. So yeah, she totally gets it. Whereas we have had meetings with other clients who will remain nameless, who didn't get it, and we've walked out. And even after
thought that we were just two silly little women.
Oh my gosh!
That had nothing better to do with our time.
Yes.
Yes.
I think the
client was wearing a very thick, heavy gold chain around his neck. So, quite frankly, when we sat down, we realised he wasn't the man for us.
I think we realised he wasn't the man for us when we talked about our audience being expat women, and he said, "In our office, we refer to those women as hanger-oners or something." Didn't he?
Or excess baggage.
That's what he called them. We refer to those women as excess baggage. And we both sat there stunned. and quickly got out of the meeting and drove home.
And then what, about 10 minutes later we went, the money's not worth it.
So, yes, we wanted to say thank you very much to the Shangri-La, and I know, Sarah, you've had a lovely time working with them over the last week, and people are going to see the evidence of that over the next little while.
And for anyone that's living in Doha and listening in, I am honestly saying this, and it's not because, you know, that they've signed on with us. It is a stunning hotel. Mm-hmm. It is right in the middle of the city, but you feel like you're a million miles away, and each section of the hotel is so different. It's like it honestly is an experience depending on whereabouts in the hotel you're going to. And anyone who loves a hot chip or a French fry, I had the best French fries of my whole entire life at their seafood restaurant there called the Yabby. And that is worth a trip to the hotel alone just for their French fries. I'm telling you, I said to our waiter and I said to the head chef, if I'm ever on death row, if I ever say something that gets me locked up here, I'll be happy as long as I have your Yabby fries.
So, okay, let's get on with the show. We're on season 2, episode 12, and we are talking about staycations. And pretty obviously, because we got on to the topic of the Shangri-La, and you and I, before I went away for Christmas, were talking about, well, if you choose not to go on vacation and go away like I have, there's also always the staycation option. Now, the definition of a staycation, because a lot of people go, it's still not the most popular.
It's a relatively new term, isn't it?
Yeah. And a very American term as well. The definition of a staycation is it's a holiday spent in one's home country rather than abroad, or it's spent at home and involving day trips and local attractions. And I think for the expat, the staycation often involves the hotel stay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess people choose staycations for the obvious reasons. Number one being money, is it's not going to cost you as much to fly somewhere else.
Yeah. And I think when you're living in a place like we do here, there's nothing really, we have to get on a plane to leave Doha. It's not even like the UAE where they've got the seven Emirates that you can visit. In Doha, there really is only Doha. So you've either got staycation where you go and stay in a hotel, or you have to get on a plane and go somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. You know, someone was asking us that the other day, and G was saying, you know, if you're Qatari, you can drive through the Saudi border and take yourself into Saudi reasonably easily. But if you're an expat, you have to go through the whole rigmarole of passport control and all the rest of it. So it's not easy in Doha. You really, you know, it's a big drive and it's a long wait on the border.
Yes.
So you're absolutely right. You really do have to fly somewhere. Now, the other reason I have partaken in quite a few staycations was when the children were really small, and the idea of getting on an aeroplane for 10 hours with, you know, four children under six wasn't as enticing.
Not appealing.
And says, this is where I have to talk about, because this week this just blew me away. Did you see the article? Yes, about the... Now, I won't say which airline it is, just in case it gets me in trouble, but there was a particular airline where some people were firstly delayed. I think they were South African, weren't they? And they were flying to New Zealand?
Yeah.
Or they were
Kiwis? Oh, no, New Zealand. They were from New Zealand.
They were Kiwis who'd been in South Africa. Is that it, maybe?
Yes, they were in Johannesburg.
Right. So the flight gets delayed, which is understandable, and they gave the airline credit and said they were quite good at putting them in a hotel. But then I think the flight was meant to go out at 11 p.m. that night, and then it was delayed again, and it didn't go until 1. So they have an 11-month-old baby who they've hung around at the airport for, and then they've done 15 hours on a flight with no food.
I will go. The thought of me not being able to eat for 15 hours just, like, gives me the sweats. So to do that with a baby?
I know. And they said it was, like, akin to child abuse. And yes, any of us who've flown with kids know that, yes, I am sure at the beginning of their journey they did have snacks and treats and all sorts of things. But I'm sure once the flight got delayed and once they'd been moved around a few times, and also all the drama of trying to get food into an airport these days, like through security.
Exactly. Yeah.
And all of that. But then, you know, they explained that they got on the plane and the air conditioning was falling.
Yes, like, it wasn't water. Only the food. They were like, the AC had broken and there was like water pouring out of the ceiling, she said. So they got on and it was boiling hot. And then during the flight, it became freezing. And then no food.
Oh, my God. I cannot not imagine. And then I read that she said they were finally, they begged and begged and begged and they got a muffin. And I was trying to imagine myself and Greg with our four children and our one muffin and exactly who would have got the most of that muffin and how that would have worked.
See, do you know something about me? I don't share food. I really don't like to share food. So had it been three of us and only one muffin, I would have said to Matt, you're good. You could stand to not have a muffin. But I think I really fought with Sadie over who was to go and get most of that muffin. I don't share. But you know what the kicker is? Apparently the people up in business class were getting a full food service.
I know. And yet that's
the economy went 15 hours without feet. You know, getting any food.
And that's disgusting. It really is. I mean, I think if they would have said surely to the people in business class, hey, we've got a real problem here and we're going to have to sort something out. I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand how that happens. But, yes, the whole thing just horrified me. Absolutely.
What a PR nightmare for that airline. Absolute PR nightmare.
Oh dear. And I guess so the other thing I guess when you think about going away too is just whether you just have the time. And I know that with our family now that we try and spend as much time as we can back at the beach house, that sometimes G just doesn't have the holidays that we need him to have to fit another trip in, like to go somewhere else. So that little staycation can just be exactly what you need. It doesn't have to be long and go for a week. It can just be a break away from the norm.
Yeah, even one or two nights can really, really recharge your batteries. And we're the same. Matt doesn't want to waste annual leave time holidaying here in Doha. Mm-hmm. We normally wait for maybe like a half-term holiday from school where he can come and stay for the weekend, but maybe Sadie and I will take an extra day. Or, you know, over Eid where we really don't want to get on a plane. And I've had friends say to me, because we try and do a staycation at least once a year, if not twice a year, and I've had friends say to me, oh, it's a bit of a waste of money, you doing this, and do you really feel like you've gotten away? And we do. We really feel like we've been on a holiday. Honestly, we do.
Oh, I'm totally with you, Sez, because I think, you know, we've done those little spring break holidays where we've gone to London and we've walked and walked and walked and walked and seen every tourist activity we can. And we've done the same thing with Paris where we've walked and walked and walked and seen as much as we can. So sometimes if you are staying at home and you're just made to sit by a pool or, you know, not cook or not clean or not do any of that, it suddenly feels like such a huge holiday just to have 3 days of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what my favourite thing is? And this is what we found when we were living in the UAE. We used to go to Dubai a lot to do our staycations. And there was obviously a lot of tourists in Dubai, especially coming across from the UK. My favourite bit was just going out the front of the hotel at the end. I still was wearing my swimmers with my caftan, you know, swimming cover up over the top, and we just hopped in the car and drove home. Wet hair, wet swimmers, whereas everyone else were having to pack their suitcases, get it to the airport, do all of that. There was just that really great feeling of just jumping in the car and driving home.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more, because there's also that beautiful feeling of, you know, check out that morning's at 10, but you can sit by the pool till 6 o'clock before you go.
Exactly, yeah, and really make the most of it. Yeah. And I think also a lot of countries these days have these entertainer books, so where you get your buy one, get one free vouchers for restaurants, and a lot of them now have hotel stays. So it's a great time to buy one of those entertainer books that were in January now, and, you know, you can get your staycation and, you know, stay two nights but only stay one, and then, you know, the cost isn't as high.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Now, I think the other great thing for expats is so often we are planning all of these holidays where we're going to go to next that we often forget to look in our backyard. So maybe it's not just about staying in the hotel, but maybe that's also the time that you decide to do a bit of a day trip around your own city and go and find things within your own city that you wouldn't usually do. And I know I get stung by it all the time when we have guests, because they'll ask me questions about things locally, and I think I haven't even investigated that myself.
Yeah, because don't you think it's always that, oh, we'll do that later, we'll do that before we go?
Yeah, absolutely, because you think, yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're going and you haven't done it.
Yes, like I still haven't been to the Grand Mosque. Now, I've dropped people off at the Grand Mosque. My children have been on school trips to the Grand Mosque. You know, every visitor we've had, I've taken them there thinking, well, I'll go with the next person because I'm too busy right now, or I'm working, or I'm, you know, this will be my chance to get some stuff done while our visitors go there. But I actually haven't been into the Grand Mosque myself.
Neither have I.
And it's beautiful. It's so absolutely.
I'll put it on my list.
Yes. All right. Maybe we should go together, Sis. Maybe we should go and we'll take the two.
You and I at Grand Mosque together.
We'll take the audience with us on a little visit, maybe.
Everyone follow the yellow flag.
All right, so we had a few readers write in and tell us about what they, because I wanted to know for expats, what locations have they lived in where they've had the best staycations? And yep. Victoria, who is otherwise known as Sarah's cousin Victoria, she wrote in and sort of made the point that they didn't feel like travelling with their very active 10-month-old over Christmas, so they opted to stay at home for a staycation instead. And she said Santa bought bikes for a trailer for the baby, so they were able to do daily bike rides, which I think is fabulous. You know those trailers. Did you ever have one for Sadie, Sis?
No, we never had one of those because we're always, I guess we could have ridden bikes in Abu Dhabi, but never had one.
Yeah, we had one in Calgary in Houston and it was fantastic. But the other thing she said was they also got sitters in for a couple of nights so that they could go out and go to the movies, that they booked in a massage for one evening where someone came to their house. I thought that was a brilliant idea.
That's a good idea.
Oh, yeah, I think it was absolutely brilliant. So I think, you know, sometimes you just have to look at your limitations, I guess, and make the most of them.
And see, Tall lives in Southern California, so what better place to be?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's also the thing with staycations. I think for us here in the Middle East, staycations tend to be at a hotel. But if you're living in a really big, vibrant city, you can still stay at home, but just make the most of what your city has to offer.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I saw Miss Habitat said that she actually made a plan where she put all her ideas on paper.
I love that idea. That's such a good idea.
I think it's brilliant too. So then that they actually wrote down which galleries and which museums and exactly what they wanted to do, and took a packed lunch and did it that way. So I think that's totally worth it. Sometimes if maybe you need to sit down with your kids and say, okay, what haven't we seen here that you'd really like to see, or what have your friends mentioned, or what do you feel like you've missed out on?
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of museums throughout the world are actually free entry. So there's a lot of things that you can do that actually don't cost a lot of money. So you can go to a museum for free, take a packed lunch. You've had a fantastic day. You've seen everything, but it hasn't cost you an arm and a leg, especially if you have know, a number of children.
Yes, yeah. So, Sarah, tell me, what are your favourite staycations?
We did a lot of staycations when we lived in Abu Dhabi because we had so many, you know, the United Arab Emirates is made up of seven emirates. So two of them, Ras Al Khaimah and Fujairah, were right on the beach and really, really small communities. So our first staycation when we were living in Abu Dhabi was to go to Fujairah over an Eid break. So we had arrived in the July and we went to Fujairah in the October Eid break, and it was like we had gone to Thailand or Bali or somewhere like that. It was right on the water, great hotel, great food. Sadie was less than a, you know, she was 6 months old.
Wow.
So we didn't get on a plane, but she was able to bob around in the pool with us. And I think we went for three nights, 4 days, mm-hmm. and it was fantastic. And we really did feel like we'd gone on a holiday. And then from then we did a lot of, where we lived in Abu Dhabi was on the Dubai side. So really, if the traffic was good, we were only 45 minutes drive from Dubai. So we spent a lot of time. We would take, you know, in the really, really hot months, sort of August and September, where there's not a lot of tourists coming from overseas, the hotels will put on really good deals. And because we were, you know, we were used to living in that heat, we would just go to one of the hotels and just lie by the pool for the weekend.
Oh, that sounds so nice.
And it was good to recharge our batteries, and it was not having to worry, you know, packing up the formula and all the bits and bobs that a baby needs on a plane. It just took away all of that hassle.
Yeah.
And we actually, a lot of the time, sometimes Matt and I went on our own and Sadie stayed with some friends and we went and had like a little adults-only staycation, which was really lovely.
Oh, that sounds superb. That sounds really nice.
And we do it here in Doha. We've been to a couple of the hotels here in Doha and I love it. I really, really love it. I do recommend it for if you feel like you're not going to get away or if you feel like it's a waste of money, I promise you that it's not.
I love it too because I think, and I can't remember who it was that said this, but quite often going away with your family is or going on vacation with your family is exactly the same. You know, life doesn't really change that much apart from you've just moved it all to a different location, particularly when you have very small children.
Yeah.
You're still, you know, like if you go and rent the house at Byron Bay and head up to Byron Bay for the weekend, which for anyone that doesn't know, it's sort of a holiday place in Australia. But if you go and do that, you can very well find yourself still doing the washing, still cooking a meal every night and still making sure that everyone's bathed and fed and into bed and, you know, you're still screaming and yelling. Whereas I think if you do the staycation and you do allow for a night in a hotel somewhere, it's a true break. You're not cooking, you're not cleaning, you don't care about the sheets. You know, you can put a movie into the DVD player in the hotel room and you know, not have to get room service is just bliss.
That's one of the things that we do if we stay for two or more nights. We always have one night where we get room service.
Yeah.
And we put the hotel bathrobes on and we all sit on the bed and we have like a bed picnic of room service. I love it. I love it.
Oh, I love that too. Now, we had a few of our readers and it's, I guess, not surprising that their recommendations for staycations were the bigger cities like Bangkok or London, Chicago, someone said. But Shari recommended Paris, which I'm sure says you'll need no convincing with that one.
I'd be happy to have a staycation for the rest of my life in Paris.
Yes. And so she just said, you know, running along the Seine and going around the big tourist attractions and just being able to sort of be amongst that beauty and those favourite spots that we all know so well in Paris. And, you know, she said just having coffee in cafes and those long al fresco dinners and all the rest of it just sounds amazing. So I guess if you're in one of those locations every weekend could be a staycation.
But this is where it gets, I feel like, don't fall into the rut of the mundane if you're living in one of those great cities. I think when you move to one of those cities, you always have that, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But sometimes you can fall into a rut of just doing your mundane, everyday things on the weekend. So if you are living in one of those great cities, make the most of it because your stay can end before you know it.
Well, that's why I think this would be a really good time for us to listen to Masha. Masha is currently living in Amsterdam, which is her home, and her husband and her have repatriated after some time as expats, and they were expats in New York and London. But she and her husband did two stints in New York.
Not bad expat.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit different to, you know, Nigeria and, you know, Senegal.
The downtown Corniche of Doha.
But I interviewed Masha and just asked her about what it was like living in New York and what they did for their staycations. So should we have a listen to her?
Sounds great.
Oh, it was amazing. It was really, it was the first time for me that I actually stayed at home with a baby, my third. The other two I had in daycare and in school in the Netherlands, and this was the first time I actually spent my time full time with the baby, and I think New York City is probably the best place to do that.
Yes, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
So
no, it was a bad thought. No.
So I have this idea, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that the reason it would have been fine to stay home with a baby is that you had so much to do and explore together.
Yes. Well, it's a funny thing with New York. The first time we moved to New York, even I was a little bit hesitant because, you know, I had been there on vacations, but I to bring my children there, I didn't feel that comfortable, but we had to. We were going anyway. But I found that, you know, the streets are far wider than you see in the movies and in the TV series. The people are very friendly, and everybody loves children. They like the Spanish people. Like in Europe, the Spaniards, they adore children. They will give them candy, their hair, and they're always friendly and always very helpful. And we found that in New York City, everybody was very happy to meet with you and hang out with kids or tell you where to go and what to do. It was all very nice. Everybody was friendly. It was open and light, and it was a very good place to be in.
And tell me, what did you do on your weekends? Because we're talking about staycations this week on the podcast. So how just maybe give me a little bit of an insight into what your weekends involve.
Of course, we had some friends through the school immediately, and you meet all the other families. But we weren't in an international school. There were some international or international-related families, but we were the expats visiting a local school. So everybody had their family to meet up with, or they would occasionally meet with us in the park, or we would go to a party. But we found that we really had all the time in the world to explore the city around us. So I'm really a big fan of magazines and newspapers, and I would always read something about some exhibit somewhere or a theater show for children or a workshop, and we would go and explore parts of the city where there would be either a greenhouse with just special plants and there would be a nice cafe nearby. It depends on the age of the children, of course,
yes,
and how much you can do with them. Yes. But it was so easy. There are so many museums. There are so many small exhibitions. There are plenty of playgrounds, and children will find any playground attractive. It doesn't matter how much is there. And most New York City playgrounds have something with water in them, so it's always quite easy to have them play, and you can read your book for a little bit. But it was, it was quite, and you know, it's fenced. It's all fenced. They can't leave, and everybody's watching your children with you. So we found it was a very friendly and open and welcome place to be in. But it was mainly, there was so many cultural options. You could take them to a children's show, just like not too long, not a big Broadway musical or anything, but there would be small performances or storytellings, and it was nice to go there and then have brunch, or have brunch and go there and then do nothing with the rest of the day. It was such an easygoing, yeah, atmosphere.
How did your day-to-day life look?
Well, we were actually quite happy with the arrangements. So we came from a nice house in the Netherlands, but not too big. I think the Dutch houses aren't really famous for their size. But we were lucky to live in an old building with high ceilings, and we had enough bedrooms. We even kept a spare bedroom for all our visitors. And we lived right on the edge of a park. We had Riverside Park as our front yard. And I think that living on the Upper West Side where we were was more like living in a small town with a lot of other families who would also just walk to school, walk around the park, walk to the supermarket. It was not the big city living most of the time. During the day, you would walk to the playground or do your shopping, drop off kids at school, have your play dates. It was not the big New York bright light city feeling that we had all the time. That was only on date nights or maybe occasionally on a weekend.
Yeah. And one thing you said that I thought was so true to anyone who arrives in a new city is that quite often you would discover something and the locals would say, oh, I haven't even been there yet, or I haven't even seen that, or I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, no, that was really, that was the funny part about it, because we felt like, okay, we're here, we can sit in the apartment, or we can just go out, and we brought our bikes, and we biked along the river, and we found something, and it was really nice, and other people had never even considered that. So on Monday, or whenever we came back to school after a break, the kids would tell them, like, oh, we went to this place, you should go, it's nice, or we should go together. And then people told us, like, oh, we never, you know, I was born and raised in New York City, never even thought about going there, or I wouldn't take my kids to that neighborhood. But obviously, over time, the neighborhood that they knew from when they were little had changed, and there were new playgrounds, and there was a lot of development going on. It was funny to see how people would think about, oh, we could do that too, instead of, you know, going to the same old place. We'll take our children and see a little bit more of our city. It didn't have to be a tourist kind of attraction. It was always something small, or we would just cross the bridge or go through a tunnel and go to New Jersey, where there would be a science museum that had a little extra something for kids, or a workshop in an art museum. It's only, you know, for so long that you can take them there. It's, you know, an hour, hour and a half, and they're done with the museum. But it was enough for us to get away from everything.
Well, I love Masha is, she comments a lot on our Two Fat Expats Facebook page, so it's really lovely now to put a voice to the written word on the Facebook page. That's really nice.
I felt exactly the same way, yep.
It's always nice when we speak to people that you know their name and what have you on the Facebook page. It's really lovely.
But the other thing about Masha too is, you know, my friend Erica, who I talk about often,
yes,
who I was friends with, Erica is now friends with Masha in Amsterdam.
Oh, nice. So you connected them?
Yes. Well, they connected each other. Masha's also been commenting on the 4 Kids 20 Suitcases page for years, and and then 2 Fat Expats. And then when Erica moved, I recognised, because I guess her name is so recognisable.
Yes.
I won't say her surname in case she doesn't want us to. But, yeah, Masha is not a name I've heard often. It's M-A-S-C-H-A, so it's quite recognizable, isn't it? And then I saw she'd become friends with Erica, and I asked her about it on the phone yesterday when I interviewed her.
Oh, how lovely. Oh, that's nice.
It's a small world. But anyway, Suze, I'm off track, so tell me what you thought.
I think you couldn't get a better place for a staycation than New York City, to be honest with you. And I loved it because Masha's kids are obviously in a local school with local kids who hadn't seen most of the stuff that Masha and her family had seen. And I think that's important to reiterate again how important it is to not fall into that, oh, we'll save that for later, we'll do that another time. You know, get amongst it. You know, it's always amazing to me that people have seen more of someone's city than a local has.
Oh, I agree, Suze. And I think also if you're a long-term expat in a city, because that's what I'm guilty of now, because I know... Yeah. I have moved to cities where I've grabbed the local Time Out and the community magazine, and I've investigated online, and I've made friends with people who've lived there for years, and then they've said, oh, I didn't even know that existed. You know, that didn't exist when we moved here. And that's me now in Doha. I don't really try hard enough now to find out what's new and what's happening that's new.
Yeah, I agree with you. I remember when we first moved here, I used to go to the Museum of Islamic Art all the time because they used to have really great exhibitions.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember the last time I was there. And over Facebook, over the Christmas holidays or the winter break, a lot of people, there's an art installation out in the desert somewhere here in Doha.
Yeah.
And I keep seeing it pop up on my Facebook page and keep on telling myself, oh, we must do that this weekend, we must go for a drive. And I just don't do it because we've been here so long now that our normal life, it's just become so normal. You know, you could pick me up and put me in Sydney and I'd still be doing the same thing.
Oh, bang on, Sarah. That art installation has been there for years and years and years. Yep, that friends of ours have been to it and have left Doha and now gone on different assignments. That's how long it's been there.
Maybe
and
we need I to haven't do a been either. That's excursion.
Oh yes, I think that's it. I think we need to go on an excursion and go and find that art installation and show people.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, we're doing that.
Yeah, got to do it because before you know it, someone will knock it down and remove it, and then we've never seen it.
That's right. yes, but I thought that was the point too. She made a really good example of why we need to keep reading and discovering and pushing ourselves to go and keep looking.
Yeah, find the Facebook pages that are your city, and, you know, I know Doha News here every week on a Thursday they'll tell you the five things to do in the city on a weekend. I always read those articles. I never do them, but I'm going to make a change.
So like me and the turtles. I haven't...
But this is going to be my resolution. I'm going to see more of the city.
Absolutely. Okay, that will be my resolution as well. Mine is I'd like to go and see the turtles. You know how they have the turtles that hatch
We have done that. We did do that. That is... amazing.
See,
we
I haven't done that.
Again, the first year we were here when we did everything.
Okay, so you had some articles as well about this.
Yeah. There's a really good, I don't think you'd call it a blog, but more like an op-ed piece by a journalist called Ken Traynor. And he has written a piece called The Art of a Good Staycation. Now, he doesn't go and stay in hotels, but he takes like a week off work and he makes sure that he doesn't stay around his local community, but he actually will go to different suburbs in the city. I think he's in London. So he'll go to the different cities, different bistros that he's always wanted to try. And he just makes sure that he says that a good staycation involves getting away not only from your day-to-day demands and drudgery, but also from friendly confines. So get out of your comfort zone. Don't go to the local pub down the road. Try the pub, you know, two or three suburbs over. Don't take the kids to the park down the road. Try a park that you haven't been to before. And I really, really liked his article because he's talking about we're always in a state of hurry in our lives these days. Everyone's in a hurry. Everyone's rushing to get somewhere. We're all busy, busy, busy. And he takes a week off every year to have a staycation where he really just, again, relaxes, recharges the batteries, goes for a bike ride, does all of that stuff that he's been wanting to do all year and waits for that week's staycation to do it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yep. Yeah.
And then there's another article on the US News Health website, and it's five tips for having a great staycation. Number one, make plans and let your kids help. And I think that's a really good trick. Whenever we've gone on holidays, not necessarily staycations, but just on holidays, the three of us will sit down and work out all the things that we want to do and see, so we all get to try something out. And I think that's really great for staycations, let your kids make the plans.
Yeah.
To get in vacation mode. So just because you're staying on your home turf doesn't mean you should get sucked back into business as usual. So everyone's better when they're on holidays, don't you think? You're a better mum, you're a better wife, you're a better person when you're on holidays, so keep that mode going. And the same things, you know, explore your local surroundings, you know, don't leave it too late, all of that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And then another really great article from The Telegraph in the UK that over the last couple of years, because of the recession, a lot of Brits, they've found that the percentage have dropped of Brits that are going abroad for vacations, they're actually staying at home because, you know, flights and accommodation and what have you are really expensive. So a lot more Brits are staying in the UK to go for their 1 to 3 day holidays. And that's a really, and that's a good point, because you do save money staying at home rather than, you know, getting on a plane and going to an expensive hotel.
Yeah, absolutely. For us, the cost of six flights is just a killer.
Yeah, and to go somewhere just for 3 or 4 days, it just doesn't make sense, does it?
No, not at all. I think particularly if you're thinking about going to Australia, it's really not worth it.
But, you know, to book six flights just to pop over to Sri Lanka for 3 days doesn't make any sense.
No.
For your when you book into one of the local hotels.
Yeah, absolutely.
And your son, the youngest boy, Henry Hot Dog, that's where he chooses. He always loves his birthday. He doesn't want the birthday parties, does he? He always likes to have a staycation.
My son is all over the staycation. Yeah. He wants
I love buffet. Henry Hot Dog. He's a boy after my own heart.
Yeah. Henry Hot Dog wants the suite. He wants the pool, he wants the buffet, and he wants the breakfast in the morning. Like he just loves it. He really is in his absolute element in any time.
We need to take the kids to the Shangri-La for a lunch or something.
Oh, I think that'd be fabulous. Except he'd want to stay the night and then have breakfast in the morning. It wouldn't be enough.
Me too.
All right, says you and I are both addicted to the same show at the moment. I've got a feeling you've probably finished it. I've got two episodes to go.
Right. So, you must have been living under a rock if you haven't heard of this show. It's a documentary series on Netflix called Making a Murderer. Now, I didn't have a Netflix account, but I'd seen these articles keep popping up on my Facebook page about this Making a Murderer documentary. Mm-hmm. So then I was actually talking to Rowena at the Shangri-La over lunch, and I said to her, do you have Netflix and how can I get it and all this VPN nonsense. Anyway, it took me 2 days. I was Bill Gates for 2 days and I finally got it organised, only for yesterday to Qatar is now allowing Netflix in Qatar. I spent days doing all of this illegal VPN-y stuff, and now they're allowing Netflix in Qatar. It's crazy. Anyway, so you need to have a Netflix account. See, I'm going to be in jail on death row eating Yabby fries because I've just admitted to illegally putting VPNs on my TV.
Did you?
Anyway, Making a Murderer is, I think it's a 10-part documentary series, mm-hmm. and it is about, I don't want to go into too much because you don't want to ruin anything, but it's about a man, Stephen Avery, who's from a very small community in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and he spent 18 years in jail for a rape that he did not commit.
Yes.
And after he was jailed for 35 years, but after 18 years, DNA evidence proved that he had not raped this woman and he was released.
Yes.
So pretty much as soon as he was released, he sued the Justice Department and he was standing to potentially win $36 million in damages. Mm-hmm. And just as that was getting ready to go to court, he was then arrested for the murder of a woman in this local community and he was sentenced to life in jail. And it's all about, did he commit this murder? Did he not commit this murder? But more than that, for me, it's just about the justice system and the way it is completely stuffed up. Whether he did it or if he didn't do it, I don't think he should be there because of what happened in the investigation and in the court case.
For me too, says I thought it was an incredible example of what happens when you're poor and what poverty does to a family.
And when you're not educated.
Yeah, and we all know those families. And, you know, my boss, and I think we've talked about this before, I work for a guy called the Barefoot Investor, and, he talks about money all the time, and it's always a thing of how money affects your life. And I was just really struck by these people had really nothing, and how much poverty affects how involved you are in the community. Yeah. Like you said, how it affects your education. Yes. I mean, one of the things that really struck me is there's a mother-son moment in the documentary where the son says, "Mum, the lawyer says that my testimony is inconsistent." And he says to her, "What does inconsistent mean?" And she says, "Yeah. I don't know."
There are so many layers to this show.
Mm-hmm.
It really is edge of your seat. And I've done a bit of research after I watched the show, and my mind has been changed about Stephen Avery. But what hasn't changed is just the law and how it works there. And they didn't have the money for good counsel. That's what it came down to. If they had money and if they were well-educated people, they would have been able to afford top-of-the-range lawyers.
Yes. Well,
there's the boy, Stephen Avery, who the show is about. He got really great lawyers because he'd already gotten a payout from the Department of Justice, so he had money to put towards a really great lawyer.
And those lawyers were terrific, weren't they?
Oh, they were fantastic, fantastic. They need to make a documentary series just on those two. But yeah. The other boy, Stephen Avery's nephew, who was also caught up in this case, he does not have the money. And the lawyer that they gave him in the beginning, my God, Matt and I were yelling at the TV.
Oh, me
so,
too.
Again, it doesn't matter if they did do it or didn't do it. The court case and the investigation was wrong on so many levels.
Yes.
So many levels.
So, Cez, you're saying that after you've watched the documentary, that you've then gone and done some other reading or looking at things, and you've changed your mind.
The show came out just before Christmas, I believe. That's when everything sort of started. So Matt and I watched it in between Christmas and New Year's, when we were staying up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with toothpicks going, one more episode. So we watched it over 2 or 3 days, and I didn't read anything online. All I saw was everything was popping up on my Facebook page, but I didn't read anything.
Mm-hmm.
So then once we finished, I then went and did my own research and read all these articles and blog posts and discussion boards. Like, I became obsessed, and I have changed my mind.
Oh.
Yes, I have changed my mind.
So do you think he did it?
I think he did it, but I don't think he should be in jail because of the investigation and the court case.
Oh.
But I think he did it. Because a lot of stuff was left out, apparently. A lot of stuff.
But what about her boyfriend and the... And sorry, this is probably really boring for people that haven't watched it, but also fascinating for those who have, so we'll just be really quick. But what about, you know, the fact of the erased phone calls from the ex-boyfriend?
Kirsty, do you know what? I'm such a fence sitter. I'm a fence sitter in all aspects of my life. And to be honest with you, one day I'm like, no, he didn't do it, because why would you go and murder someone when you're standing to win $36 million? Like, you'd have to be a fool. And he's not educated enough to have gotten away with the way that he got away with it. Well, he might have, you know what I mean, with all the evidence and the DNA that didn't exist. He's not a smart enough man.
Mm-hmm.
To have orchestrated that. Mm-hmm. But then when stuff that they didn't, that was in the court case but wasn't shown on the documentary, he is not a good man.
Tell me one thing.
He was stalking this girl. He was stalking the girl that was murdered. He was calling her incessantly. He was calling her and blocking his phone number so she didn't know it was him.
Oh.
He had killed a cat, which they did make mention of in the beginning of the documentary.
They told you that in the documentary.
But not as graphic as what actually happened.
Didn't he throw it over the fire or something? And it...
Yeah, but when you read into what he actually did, it was, and they always say that people that start murdering animals end up being sociopaths and serial killers.
Mm.
So I just, but then part of me is like, if you're going to win $36 million, why would you murder someone? And I think the cops absolutely hated them and just wanted him away. I don't know. Mm. And I feel the person I feel the most sorry for is his nephew. Whether he had anything to do with it or not, I feel like I was crying for him. I felt I just wanted to give him a big hug. It is fascinating. The documentary series is fascinating.
All right, let's get on to something lighter. So that was your... Oh, no, hold it. We've missed one thing. You were going to tell me about the hot cinnamon donuts.
Oh, yeah. So just quickly, I've said it about a million times on this podcast how much I love a good hot cinnamon donut, and only from Australia. No other country makes a hot cinnamon donut as well as Australia. Mm-hmm. And I really do miss them when I'm living here. Mm-hmm. But our one of our favourite bloggers from Australia, Baby Mac,
love her.
She ate a hot cinnamon tea cake, and she said it's as good as tasting like a hot cinnamon donut as you will find. So I'm making that this week.
Oh, yes.
So I'll put the link in the show notes.
Oh, please do. Please do. We do love Baby Mac. All right, and my only thing was this morning I woke up to one of my favourite yearly events, and that is each year the lamb people for Australian Lamb make an Australia Day ad that's encouraging you to put some lamb on the barbecue for Australia Day. And it's always run by a very funny man called Sam Kekovich. And he is the lambassador of Australia. And this year's campaign is just a cracker. So earlier...
They've really taken it up a notch, haven't they?
Oh, they have.
Well, the value on the commercial is amazing.
I thought last year was going to be really hard to beat. I don't know if you can remember. Last year they had Richie Beno had a barbecue, and Richie Beno has passed away now, but he was Australia's most loved cricket commentator. And he was just infamous in Australia because people love to try and impersonate him. Yes, 2 for 22 and
yes.
And so it was really hard because last year they had Richie Beno. It started with him standing out in his backyard, and he called Captain Cook, Ned Kelly, Birkin Wheels, Ita Buttrose and Sam Kekovich all to his house for a Australia Day barbecue, and it was just hysterical. You know, Ita was going to bring the lamingtons and Sam was bringing the cutlets, and it was just very, very funny. But this year is just great because they've used SBS newsreader Lee Lin Chin, and she became...
I love her so much.
Oh, so
I've got such a girl crush on her. She's like a serious newsreader on a very serious TV channel back home.
Yes.
But she's funny.
She's very funny.
She's really funny.
Yes, she is very, very funny in this. And she launches Operation Boomerang, which is a mission to save Aussies abroad, which really appealed to me because I have been an Australian abroad on Australia Day and missed all the stuff. And that they were saying that there were too many Australians abroad who are going to go without lamb on their barbecue.
Yeah.
So they go and start collecting them. And what I love is they use a couple of really prominent Aussies, like Stephen Moore, from the captain of the Wallabies, and Mitch Johnson, who has just retired from Australian cricket. But they also just use everyday Aussies who... So they've got an example of a guy, an Aussie in Japan, and an Aussie in London who's sitting there drinking his warm beer.
But when they kidnap Princess Mary from Copenhagen, and I love the sign says, "Not really Copenhagen," because it is just such a sin.
But my favourite is when they kidnap or they break into the hipster's apartment in New York, and he says, "But I'm a vegan
now."
and then Lee
goes, "Vegans."
And then she says, "Torch the apartment," and they torch it.
Oh, so funny, so funny.
Yeah, so that was my favourite. So I've put a YouTube clip up for the running sheet for that, and also on last year's as well, if anyone wants to have a look at what last year's looked like too. But yeah, that
was
that
typical Australian humour.
Absolutely, it tickled my fancy today. So yeah, that's us, I think, now, Sez, because we've been talking for about an hour or so now. So yeah, I guess we will get together. Now, we're going to be doing this remote chatting for another 4 or 5 weeks. I start my radiation tomorrow morning, so that should just be great fun, because I not only went to go and find out about my radiation, but I found out that when you have breast cancer on your left breast, they worry with radiation that they're going to radiate your heart and your lung.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
And so not everybody has to do this, but I think my radiation oncologist has really gone down a path that we're all going to live in regret, where I have this snorkel-like device and I have to take a huge, big, deep breath in, so that imagine when you take a breath in, your chest wall goes out, so it goes away from your heart, and then they block off all the air so that you basically have no air while they count to 30, and then they give you air again and let your chest wall go down. And I cannot...
So are you telling me you have to hold your breath for 30 seconds?
Uh-huh, throughout the process.
And oh my goodness.
I know. It's kind of like being on an aeroplane for 15 hours with no food.
Are you feeling the pressure to hold your breath for 30 seconds?
Yes, they made me practice. And, you know, we started with sort of 15 and then we went to 20 and then we went to 25. And because the other really tricky thing that people don't often talk about is when you have chemo, one of the side effects of chemo, and it's definitely been a side effect for me with this final round, is you're really quite breathless, and so I can't walk up any stairs without looking like I've just ran a marathon, and I'm really breathless all of the time. So to do this on top of it is just like, are you serious, really?
I mean, once a week, how many times a week do you have to have it?
Monday to Friday, every day.
Are you kidding me?
No.
For how many weeks?
5 weeks.
Oh, it actually sounds like it, because in my mind, I would have thought radiation would be the easy part after chemo, but it kind of sounds like it's the kicker.
I think it would have been easier if I'd got it in my right boob, not my left boob. And it would be easier if I lived just around the corner from the place where it's at, because it's really a really fast process. Like, I think you're all in there for about half an hour all up, and probably 20 minutes of that is getting you on the table and getting you set up, and 10 minutes of that is radiation. But for me, it's a 45-minute drive in and a 45-minute drive out. And, yeah, and I'm working. So it's...
What a palaver.
It is a palaver. It is a palaver. But, hey, when the palaver's over, we'll be celebrating. Yeah. We will
Back
be celebrating.
Yeah. We'll be at the Shangri-La having a few cocktails.
Oh, we will be. Thank you, Shangri-La. I can't wait to come and see you again.
And the next episode, we're talking about... eating and healthy eating, which, well, for me, that's kind of almost like an oxymoron, but anyway. But we're going to be talking about where to find really good sourcing local products in your country, in your city, and what to use when you can't find the things that you need to cook with. And we'll be actually talking to the executive chef at the Shangri-La on how he sources all of his ingredients for the hotel.
Yeah, and I think that'll be really interesting, because I think that is one of the big things for expat life, is that, you know, you might have all these fantastic cookbooks and then you can't find half of the ingredients where you live.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Sez. Well, you have a great week, and I'll talk to you again this time next week.
And we'll see everyone next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.